Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back in hour number 2 of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it was an eventful weekend for the Titans. We'll have Corey Curtis on from News 2 at 8 o'clock to talk more about that. Also, Mike Tannenbaum from ESPN joins us at 9 o'clock. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us at 7:30 to help break down the Vols. But another interesting thing over the weekend was the college football playoff selection show, and a great Saturday for college football, especially the SEC title game, I thought was good and pretty entertaining throughout between Alabama and Florida. But the rankings come out. Alabama finishes number 1. Clemson with number 2 after they just destroyed Notre Dame on Saturday. Ohio State moves up to number 3 after a slow start against Northwestern. They run the ball in the second half and pull away from Northwestern. They're up to number 3, and then Notre Dame holds on after getting demolished by Clemson to the number 4 ranking in the college football playoffs. So that means no Texas A&M, Oklahoma left outside, Cincinnati left outside the top 4 in the playoff rankings, and that has everyone, Joe, asking the question, of the 4 teams in the college football playoff, did the committee get it right? Was there somebody, maybe Texas A&M, maybe even Cincinnati, that has a legitimate gripe to not be or for not being in the playoff as opposed to a team like maybe Notre Dame or even Ohio State, who only played 7 games, Joe?
Yeah, look, they have a legitimate gripe. They absolutely do. I mean, Cincinnati, to me, is the example of why we should never expect, while we have this setup, this 4-team setup, we should never expect a group of 5 team to get in. It's just, and, you know, Gary Barta just talked in circles yesterday with his explanations, but that's tough for Cincinnati to do what they did and really know they have no chance. And the rankings last week kind of set us up to know that for sure. And then, you know, Texas A&M has a beef. I mean, Texas A&M, you know, lost 1 game to the clear best team in the country. Yeah, they got rolled. But that was also a long time ago, and they've clearly gotten better. Teams improved through the season. And look, I think that it's – while I don't think it's a deal breaker, I think it's fair if you're Texas A&M to sit there and say, okay, so we went through way more of a grind than Ohio State, exposed ourselves to more opportunities for losses, exposed ourselves to more opportunities for injury, and we should get more credit for that. Now, you could also, if Texas A&M, I mean, I think we knew going to yesterday, at least that's how I looked at it, was Ohio State's in, they righted the ship. You're not keeping out an undefeated, you know, Big Ten champion, especially not one that we know has one of the 3 most talented rosters in the country. I mean, whatever people think about that, it wasn't going to happen. So I thought it was more between Texas A&M and Notre Dame. I thought Notre Dame would get in. They did get in. But I think Texas A&M has a case there too.
And then talking about like the grind of it with Ohio State, I mean, Saban came out and said, quote, that was the big thing about this season. The people who played 10 and 11 games had to survive the grind. And the grind of this season was a whole lot different than any other season. That's why I thought those teams should be rewarded. But I think Ohio State has a great team, and they probably deserve to be in the playoff as well based on the quality of team that they have. So nice little save there by Saban at the end.
Yeah, well here's the thing. I mean, when it comes down to it, if you weren't going to say at the beginning, hey, Big Ten, sorry, good for you guys for changing your minds and seeing that everybody else is playing and all of a sudden totally reversing course. I mean the Big Ten's just – I mean, hilarious. You know, like the Big Ten itself doesn't deserve this. You know, they have now changed, of course, they've gone from 21 to 17 days too with the COVID standards to get guys in this. I mean, like they change every rule they have and they make stupid rules in the first place. The Big Ten doesn't deserve this. But the bottom line is everyone needed to say at the beginning, sorry, guys, this isn't going to work. If you weren't going to say that from the start, then we knew that it was probably going to be Ohio State at six games, fewer games than everybody else, right? We knew from the start this was going to be the case. So I agree. Like, the grind is absolutely different, and especially you're playing only league foes. You don't have any gimme games in there. You don't have a guarantee game in there where you can – win by 40 and get all your subs in the game, you know, your second and third string. So I agree with all that. But again, you either say it at the beginning or you deal with the reality that Ohio State undefeated is going to be in this playoff.
And now you look at the matchups. You've got Alabama taking on Notre Dame and then Clemson taking on Ohio State. Honestly, like, Joe, I look at this and maybe it's because I've seen this happen with Notre Dame before, and maybe it's just because we saw them get demolished on Saturday against Clemson, but I think Alabama is just going to absolutely destroy Notre Dame in this playoff. The Clemson-Ohio State game, to me, much more interesting. We saw it last year. Great game. You can make an argument that Ohio State was the better team in that game, and Clemson just found a way to get it done. Ohio State screwed it up towards the end, but really interested to see what this matchup should be. I mean, Ohio State, a part of not playing as many games as anybody else, yeah, maybe the grind hasn't been there. Also, with like as many disruptions as they've had as their schedule, I wonder how sharp they are from an execution standpoint. I mean, you can't start off the first half against Clemson like you did against Northwestern and expect to be in that game in the second half. Like, it just won't happen.
No, for sure. And you're right. I mean, they've had a lot of disruption, a lot of guys missing. So that's a valid concern. I also think that that game to me was, you know, sometimes when a team is thinking – you can't tell me Ohio State thought Northwestern was going to put up a fight. And you also, I looked at that as Ohio State thinking about style points. And sometimes when that happens, you know, you can get stunned. You can get smacked around. And Northwestern just executed so well early in that game. I mean, Peyton Ramsey's not very good, but he was great early in that game. Their defense was great. You know, it's just a totally different matchup. I think Ohio State still has time here to figure it out and give us a great game. And I agree with you on Alabama Notre Dame. I will say this. I think that Alabama's defense, which, like you have pointed out last week, has been getting a lot better during this season. I think it has the potential to keep Notre Dame in this game for longer than some people might think. Now, Ian Book's going to have to play great, and frankly, he was just disappointing in some key moments in that game against Clemson where they needed him to be great and make all those throws, and he missed a few. You can't make mistakes. But I think Notre Dame's offense, the collection, you know, the receivers they have, great running back, I think that they have a chance to put up points in the game against Alabama and at least give us an entertaining game for a while. But, yeah, it's hard to imagine many stops for the Irish against that offense. It's hard to imagine anyone stopping them.
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, the Alabama offense is just ridiculous. So we knew that heading into the game against Florida, and Florida's defense, it hadn't been great all year. I was surprised that Alabama struggled as much as they did defensively. I said here on the show Friday, I didn't think that game was going to be particularly close. I liked Alabama big in the SEC title game against Florida, but Florida's offense, to their credit, they showed up, they played well. Kyle Trask was very good in that game. That is the only concern about Alabama that I have moving forward is I don't think it's a huge concern with their defense, especially given the fact that their offense is going to put up, you know, 50, 55 points every game. But that was surprising to me that they struggled as much as they did in the game on Saturday. I know it's not surprising to some people just based on the way Florida's played all year, but I was surprised that Alabama's defense didn't have a better showing.
Well, and they had a little stretch there. All of a sudden, Florida's just like running like up the middle.
Yeah.
You know,
which they haven't done all year.
They don't even run the ball, but I thought that was actually pretty impressive from Florida to kind of, it was like basically like, okay, let's have our series where we're just going to go Trask QB draw. And of course they brought Emory Jones in for some of that too. But I mean, look, Alabama has only had one horrific defensive night, and that was that crazy Ole Miss game. But we're headed for some high scoring playoff games, I would say, which after the same old of the selection and the rankings, and we're all complaining about the whole system right now. I mean, we're at least we're gonna get some games that are fun to watch. I'll be surprised if we don't.
So let me ask you this: heading into the college football playoff, who would you say is the favorite to win the national championship? Because we talked about it like before the whole season started, and we had a picture of what it was going to look like. Both you and I said, I mean, Ohio State might have the best team in the country. The last few weeks, my answer has been Alabama and Alabama alone. Clemson, I mean, they showed me a lot on Saturday against Notre Dame. They looked great. Trevor Lawrence looked like the best player in the country. So if you had to pick a favorite for the national championship, who would it be at this point?
You know, I'm tempted to say Clemson. Because I think that they're a little bit more well-rounded team. And I honestly, when it comes down to it, you know, Trevor Lawrence is not going to win the Heisman, but I think he might be the best player. And certainly he's going to be the number one player picked. By the way, the Jacksonville Jaguars, congratulations. The New York Jets won, and you are now in position to get Trevor Lawrence.
I heard from Todd yesterday, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yes, I did, so on Twitter.
Todd's into it.
He reemerged.
Right. Good for you, Todd. Good to hear from you again, Todd. It's close. Because Alabama still, that's the game. You know, look, and Ohio State could beat Clemson, but the way they've played and now the way Clemson looked against Notre Dame, I don't know, man. I don't know if Ohio State can hang with that. Justin Fields is going to have to play at a higher level. I think, to me, he has – and look, I know the other day when you're missing some of your key receivers and you don't have the same chemistry with other guys who are on the field, that makes a big difference. But Justin Fields, to me, has dropped a little bit this year. You know, he has had some ups and downs. Trevor Lawrence is just in complete command. I think I'd still give Alabama the slight edge as the favorite just because that offense is just so ridiculous and might just be able to outscore everybody. But Clemson is a very close second for me based on what I saw against Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think it's between Alabama and Clemson too. I will say, until I see somebody stop Alabama's offense, I'm going to operate under the assumption that nobody can stop Alabama's offense. Like, and there's just too many weapons. Like, even, you know, when they throw an interception, Mechie just – we talk about Derrick Henry throwing somebody in the ground. That hit by Mechie was one of the hardest hits I've ever seen in my life, and he's a receiver.
That was awesome. That was amazing. And such a – that's a big play for Florida, you know, a big loss because, like, anytime you can steal a possession against Alabama, you got to do it. But, yeah, what a hit by Mechie.
When we come back, it was an eventful weekend for both the Doors and the Vols in two very different ways. We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, an interesting day yesterday. Vanderbilt has a press conference at 10 a.m. yesterday morning introducing Clark Lea as their next coach. You were on the call and on the Zoom call for the press conference with Clark Lea. What stood out about that press conference, in your opinion, with Vanderbilt's new football coach?
Yeah, first of all, obviously very strange timing
for
Clark Lea, but that's the reality also of, you know, a coach who just came off the ACC championship and, of course, is now preparing for Alabama. He gets Clemson. He comes in for a presser. He gets Alabama next. And, of course, he's also trying to put together a staff and all that. I wrote about Clark Lea's presser at theathletic.com as well, some of the things that stood out to me. But look, I mean, he was really good. He was very good in the press conference. I thought he, you know, really made a strong case for why he got the job to me. Like when I'm listening to him talk, I'm like, you know, I could see this guy killing in an interview. But also, I mean, he really talked a lot about, you know, sort of the foundational change that needs to happen for Vanderbilt. I know, of course, he was trying to – it was attempted a couple times. They asked him about the facilities thing, and he didn't want to get into specifics. He did talk about his offense. I think that's probably the thing that, you know, Vanderbilt fans probably liked least about it. And I get it because, you know, we talked about, you know, getting the ball to playmakers in space and all that, but then he's, you know, you got to have that fourth quarter running game, which of course isn't wrong in football, but when you think about Vanderbilt, it's always, you know, can you have the horses in this league to be able to run the ball? I mean, it's going to be some kind of a pro style offense. And I still think, you know, there's a lot of wiggle room within that, and we're going to see who he hires. I mean, that's going to be huge. His offensive staff, who does he bring in to be his OC? So that was on the football side of things. He had some really interesting stuff about Don Meyer. Tim Corbin, we know about the relationship there.
Yeah.
But he was talking about going to Don Meyer camps as a kid and just has notebooks from that and things like that. And then later, you know, Don Meyer kind of served as a mentor to him, the late, great Don Meyer, of course, one of the great college basketball coaches of all time. So that was interesting. I mean, obviously it's, no surprise. I mean, this place is, Nashville and Vanderbilt, they are very dear to him. I mean, that's a big part of his life growing up. But he had some strong comments about I asked him about the Northwestern Stanford thing, which is, it's like obvious question 101. But he was like, why put any ceiling on this? And of course, a lot of people would say, well, because in the last century, it's been pretty clear that there's a ceiling. But I would say that if you're a recruit, a player on this team now, a Vandy alum, and you listened to him yesterday, you probably were pretty pumped.
Yeah, and that's the thing I took away from the press conference yesterday, just kind of reading some of the quotes that came out after, was it sounded like a guy who completely understands Vanderbilt and where that program is and what it's going to take to get them to the next level. Now, it remains to be seen, obviously, on whether or not he's going to be able to do that, but it sounded like to me like the number one thing I took away yesterday, Joe, was it's not surprising that Vanderbilt made this hire. If that's what he was like in the interview process with Kansas Story Lee, then I think he made the decision pretty easy for Vanderbilt.
Exactly. And look, again, going into this, I wrote the column that I thought it should be Will Healy, and I envisioned Will Healy killing in the interview, and I'm sure he was good. I'm sure there were others who were good too. Lance Leopold, by the way, Buffalo got stunned in the MAC championship game, but there's another guy who really an impressive coach who's done a lot of good things at lower levels, but it's hard to imagine anyone coming close to Clark Lee based on, what we heard from him yesterday. And again, it's just like the understanding of the place. I still think that is, that's one of those things that probably can be very overrated, and you don't want to put too much in that in general, but this is a different place. And, if he can leverage that understanding, and not to mention his connections and all that, and do the things that need to be done, it's going to end up being obviously a great hire. He had some interesting comments about being a player and another team being at the Motor City Bowl, and so they had rights to use the Vanderbilt weight room, though they sort of took over. That was part of the bowl agreement, and how ticked off he was about that as a player. And that was just sort of his example of like the program, like it should have its own stuff. It should not have to do things like that. It should have better. He really didn't want to get into the, like he said, the buildings, that wasn't the most important thing, but he has a, like he said, he won 6 games in 3 seasons as a player. So he understands the challenges, and now we're going to find out if he can turn that around and do something like what James Franklin did.
And then switching gears to Knoxville on Saturday, another tough one for the Vols. They fall 34-13 to Texas A&M. It started off well. They got up 7-0 in the game. Harrison Bailey and that Tennessee offense looked great on the first drive. And then it was just all downhill from there. No Eric Gray in the game. And they just couldn't get the ball. Like Texas A&M had the ball for the majority of that game, and Tennessee finishes 3-7 on the season. Now we'll be going to a bowl game playing against West Virginia in the Liberty Bowl, but 3-7 in the regular season for Tennessee. A very disappointing season for Jeremy Pruitt and company.
Yeah, and then just all kinds of weirdness after that. And I don't know what the heck's going on in Knoxville, but
do we ever? Is there ever a time where we're like, yep, okay, cool.
No, but this is, I mean, this is something else. You know, you've got the investigation, of course, which is internal, still not clear on, like, NCAA involvement on that. Trey Wallace, Fox Sports Knoxville, friend of the show, good job of breaking that, kind of came out. I think it came out maybe right before the game or early in the game.
Tennessee got up 7-0, and it came out immediately. The Tennessee fans enjoyed the lead for like 6 seconds, and then Trey Wallace brought the report out that Tennessee was under investigation from its own compliance department and the NCAA.
Very on brand.
So, yes. Yeah. So before you get too excited, Vols fans, here's something else. which of course, you know, and again, like, I mean, I was one of three people who asked Jeremy Pruitt after the game about Eric Gray not being in the game. Because basically, you know, Pruitt wouldn't say that it was because of this, you know. The problem is, you know, so he basically confirmed that it was. The problem is, like, if it's not that, because before the game, I guess Bob Kessling said COVID-19 on Eric Gray. And I don't think Bob Kessling, you know, was being, you know, deceiving on purpose. That was probably just the presumption, right? Or just some kind of a miscommunication. But, you know, our David Ubbin has written some on this too, something that posted last night. I mean, it's confirmed that Maurer and Gray are related to this via a source. And so then you get to the whole, okay, why is this happening now? How serious is this? Is this someone internally who's trying to make it so that Tennessee can fire Jeremy Pruitt for cause? Is this cloak and dagger stuff? Is this serious maybe? And then you get Philip Fulmer last night with a statement that's like, I support Jeremy Pruitt, you know, and it's a statement that makes it sound like, you know, Pruitt will be back next year, which of course Vols fans are all taking in stride very well. Yes. So I heard, you know, that maybe yesterday might be a crazy day on this front. There's a lot to figure out in the days ahead. And I mean, your guess is as good as mine as to where this is going to go.
Yeah. And, you know, we mentioned a few weeks ago, you know, Fulmer going on Vol calls and kind of leaving himself some wiggle room. I saw that statement yesterday, and the first thing I thought was, all right, well, that answers that. Pruitt's going to be back next year. I mean, he basically said, you know, looking forward to the bowl game and gives you some opportunity to practice and get ready for next season when Coach Pruitt and company are back on the field. I mean, it didn't seem like there was much wiggle room that Fulmer left himself with that statement.
Right. Now, of course, you know, I've been hearing from people for weeks now, well, don't assume this is Phil's call, you know.
Yeah.
And look, there are people with a lot of money, a lot of power, who have been known to meddle at Tennessee. So, I mean, it's just hard to imagine to me that Philip Fulmer would be just basically pushed aside in a decision made above him on this. But he certainly has made it clear where he stands at the very least. Now, of course, we still have to see where things go with this investigation. I mean, if it's serious stuff, it may be. And Brian Niedermeyer, by the way, is also part of the investigation. Probably the most accomplished recruiter on staff. I mean, he's a guy who has gotten all kinds of acclaim for his incredible recruiting prowess. He's part of this. So does this get to serious levels? Maybe that means other people get fired and not Pruitt, but I mean, I'm keeping an open mind on all of it. In the meantime, hey, you guys get a bowl game for whatever that's worth. You guys get to play football again. Everybody want that? All right, let's do it.
See if we can't get this to 3-8. Close this thing out in style before the season comes to an end. When we come back, we'll continue this discussion. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We're talking some Vols. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our friend Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. Josh, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, doing well. Good morning.
Josh, so obviously a lot to get to today, but we'll start with the game itself between Tennessee and Texas A&M. Tennessee loses 34-13. Looked like the opening drive, we might have some actual creativity offensively. Things looked good, and it just spiraled out of control from there. What were your thoughts on the game and specifically the quarterback situation with JT Shroud and Harrison Bailey?
Yeah, if they could have stopped the game after that drive, then all would have been good. Unfortunately, they had to keep playing on, and it was downhill there from Tennessee. I mean, if you look at it that way, it's a 34-6 game from then on out, and it could have been worse, I think, if Texas A&M really wanted it to be. Texas A&M played its game, and that was in dominant fashion against Tennessee. And the offense early on, it showed what we've seen from the offense at times, but limited times this season, where you'll see a spark and you'll see reason to believe something good is going to happen. But overall, it just wasn't there. And we had the quarterback shuffling again that I think has led to more questions from Tennessee fans about the evaluation of the position this year and over the last few years. And are things really going to get better into 2021, even as you're going to be moving on from Jarrett Darrentano? That process has started. And you think about it, you've had a month roughly to get Harrison Bailey and JT Shroud ready to play. And at times, again, things have been good, at times not. Will it get much better? That's the big question, because I think things will improve. But if you're watching Texas A&M, if you're watching the best teams in the SEC compared to Tennessee, Tennessee has a long way to go to reach what those teams are doing offensively.
So, Josh, everything other than the game, can you please give me your evaluation? What in the world is happening in Knoxville right now?
Well, I would say things are back to normal, so that might bring a comforting feeling to fans as we're closing out 2020, because the year has been anything but. But this past weekend, I mean, here we are again. And the way I've thought about it is, with the report coming out during the game on Saturday, and the way Jeremy Pruitt answered or didn't answer questions, one of which came from you, Joe, after with the press conference about Eric Gray and the investigation and what exactly is the deal there. To me, it brings up questions of, okay, well, who wants that information out during the game? To me, that's a pretty obvious question to ask. Why do they? Where's the support for Jeremy Pruitt? Because we see it coming from Philip Fulmer with his statement that he put out. While he has not absolutely said that Jeremy Pruitt will be the coach in 2021, he talked about him coaching the team in the spring. That would indicate he'll probably coach the team next fall, too, if Philip Fulmer has his say. But what are other people saying? And 3 years ago, when Philip Fulmer took over as the athletic director, the thought was, okay, well, these issues that have gone on, they will come to an end. And for a short period of time, that was the case. But here we are again with questions about what's going on behind the scenes, and is everybody on the same page? Because it doesn't appear that they are.
And Josh, with that point, like, you brought up Fulmer there, and basically the way I read the statement that he came out with was basically him saying that he's going to be the coach, Jeremy Pruitt, in the spring, and then, of course, like you said, in fall next year. Where do we think this goes? What do we think that means from Fulmer, or ultimately maybe other people, and maybe this NCAA investigation itself maybe making a different decision on Pruitt's behalf?
Yeah, let's see. And with the investigation, I mean, there's so much unknown.
Yeah.
It's in the early stages in terms of the conversation about it. And I think there's because so many fans are ready to move on from Jeremy Pruitt, the obvious reaction that fans had was, okay, great, this will get us out of the contract. And it's not that simple. Could it ultimately save Tennessee money if Tennessee decided to make a move? It could, but it also could not. So that is far from guaranteed. But the statement says Jeremy Pruitt will be coaching the team in the spring. So why would you be making a move after that? That makes me wonder, okay, Philip Fulmer is backing Jeremy Pruitt, but how many people are going to back Jeremy Pruitt? And will Tennessee's administration back Philip Fulmer and whatever he wants to do with the position? How great is that struggle? And by the way, the cost on Jeremy Pruitt right now is just incredible. And some fans don't want to hear that number. Some fans hear that number is like, well, why did we put ourselves in that position? That's why you can have so many layers to this conversation, and that's why it's a mess again right now, at least it appears that way with Tennessee football.
Well, and listen, it's very easy to go the conspiracy way when you're talking about Tennessee football. But yeah, you could also read – I mean, I know that you just said it, Josh. As soon as it comes out, one of the first thoughts is, okay, so who wants this out? You know, who is giving this information and for what reason? And look, I heard from people say, oh, Fulmer, remember the majors thing, you know, cloak and dagger. Yeah. So, you know, you could also look at Fulmer's statement as at least in part like, by the way, I'm not the one trying to undermine my head football coach. You know, I mean, there's so many ways. It's just we have bits and pieces of information and we make assumptions. I just feel like we've got some serious twists and turns in the days ahead.
Yeah, no doubt. We're back to it's like a reboot of Game of Thrones at Tennessee football. That's the way it felt when John Curry was trying to hire a coach, and day by day there was a different coach involved, and you hear rumors about what's going on behind the scenes, and ultimately John Curry's out as athletic director. We just have so many examples, and maybe this doesn't reach that. Maybe it doesn't. But because of Tennessee's past, there's a reason that this is coming up again, and that fans and look, you have the social media aspect, which is always going to be tied to this, no doubt, and things can get heated very quickly, and all eyes are on the Rock to see what will be painted next this week on campus. And it's just that's Tennessee football. But at the beginning of 2020, after Tennessee had finished off the 2019 season on a positive note and Tennessee had signed a solid 2020 recruiting class, Phil Fulmer was speaking to some Tennessee fans, and he proclaimed the Vols are back, and they were going to be taking a bite out of everybody's backside soon, and instead Tennessee went 3-7, and fans had bought in, and maybe not all, but many were all in on Jeremy Pruitt. He was the guy that was going to save the program, and Phil Fulmer is going to get Tennessee football back to the top, and now I think many of those people have the opposite feeling, and they want to get out of it as quickly as possible, and when emotion starts to get involved, especially with Tennessee football, conversations like the one we're having right now pop up again.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Josh, through all that, it's announced Tennessee has a bowl game against West Virginia. They will play in the Liberty Bowl. And you joined us last week, talked about maybe what the approach from some players would be, especially, you know, given what's happening around the country. How do you think this football team approaches the next few weeks leading up to this bowl game against West Virginia?
Yeah, they have 10 days to get ready for it on December 31st. I don't know. I think most players are going to go ahead and get ready to play in the bowl game. There might be some opt-outs, and that's not just with Tennessee, with other schools. If players are looking at transferring, then they need to start making those decisions because you have a spring semester that's coming up right around the corner. But the indication from players after the game on Saturday, it was a limited group, that they wanted to go play in a bowl game. They would be ready to play. So eyes will be on the transfer portal to see if some Tennessee players hop in there now that the regular season is over. We've seen guys like Brandon Johnson announce it recently, and Jared Garantano on Saturday after the game confirmed that he is in the transfer portal. But it looks like Tennessee is going to get ready to go play in a game, and I think the SEC made a pretty clear message, sent a pretty clear message to the schools, even schools like Tennessee, South Carolina, you name them, that, hey, if you get an invitation, you're going to be playing in a bowl game, and that's where Tennessee is. So I would, my guess is behind the scenes you're going to get a mixed reaction of honesty if they were to say, yeah, I do or do not want to go play in this bowl game. But I think most will get up, get ready to go play in a game against West Virginia.
Yeah, thank goodness we get 2-8 South Carolina in a bowl game. Just what we all
need. We need more South Carolina.
Meanwhile, Army can't get in one.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not a good weekend for the look of college football, in my opinion, with the way the playoff came out, and I would say more with the bowl games. If somebody out there is somebody who typically makes fun of college football and doesn't really understand the system, this weekend gave some ammunition, in my opinion, to those people.
No doubt about it. All right, now, I wanted to bring a little sunshine into the show. I'm accused of being too negative, and I've got to ask you, Josh, how good is this Tennessee men's basketball team? I feel like this could be something special.
I think it could be, too, and there are things to work on, and Rick Barnes and Tennessee staff would not go there yet with what it can be, but I think Tennessee is ahead of what I expected, and I had incredibly high expectations on the defensive side. And that, to me, is what will give Tennessee the best chance to be competitive, to win the SEC, and to try to make a run to a Final Four for the first time in school history. And it's not going to be easy. Nobody's going to make that claim. But if Tennessee can shoot a little bit better as the season goes along, and if they develop more of an offensive identity, which I expect them to, defensively they are so good because of the length, the athleticism, and the effort that they have on the perimeter. To me, that's the biggest deal. It's one thing to bring in freshmen like Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer, and they look like NBA players. But if they're not fighting on the defensive end, it's not going to make that big of a difference. It actually could take you in the opposite direction. But they've come in and worked, and that pushes guys that I think you expect to fight on the perimeter on defense. Guys like Victor Bailey Jr., who's now playing for you, and then Eve Pons is the ultimate difference maker for you on that side of the floor. But the way that this team has already appeared to buy in with all the new pieces that have come in, and John Fulkerson and Pons, I think, understanding their roles as leaders. This is a really talented basketball team. It's easily the deepest and most talented that Rick Barnes has had, and that's why I think it has the highest upside as a team that Rick Barnes has had.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexar. Josh, great stuff as always, my man. We appreciate you taking time to join us.
Hey, you got it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Absolutely. When we come back, we will dive back into the Titans, give you an update on the playoff picture and the path towards maybe another AFC South championship, the first time since 2008 for the Titans. We'll discuss that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Monday morning. Nice job, Elijah. That's well done.
Figured you might get that one.
That was
Joe,
good.
Not so much. That was more geared for the millennials. And
very,
the
very good. We're all about the millennials here on this show.
Well, you got to explain it to me now.
We'll explain it to you in the break. We got a lot of Titans football to talk about.
Our listeners don't want to know this. Maybe our listeners would like to be.
Elijah, take it away.
The SpongeBob fans know where that's at. That is Sweet Victory by the SpongeBob
Correct.
Crew. Performed in the Bubble Bowl
yes.
in the infamous Band Geeks episode, which yes. is the greatest episode of SpongeBob ever created.
The greatest.
Wow.
It's number one.
SpongeBob. I like a little SpongeBob.
Yeah.
And you just didn't get that one?
No, I mean, man. I'm not a hardcore fan like you guys.
Thank wow, you. It's like saying you're a Star Wars fan and never watched The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, I mean, come on. What are we doing here? So, Joe, we talked about this a little earlier in the show. The playoff path for the Titans right now is interesting because, you know, you're leading the division, you're 10-4, you're in first place in the AFC South. You feel great about things, but you look around the rest of the AFC. Right now, Cleveland is the 5 seed. They're also 10-4. Of course, Indianapolis, who you're in a battle with for the division, 10-4. And then Miami and Baltimore, both at 9-5. And Joe, you laid it out there earlier with the Ravens and their schedule. I mean, there's a great chance that they're going to end up 11-5 on the year. We'll see about Miami. I think a lot of it has to do with what Buffalo has left to play for in their last game coming up here. But it's interesting. If you're the Titans, you've got a tough game on Sunday against the Packers. An interesting game on week 17 against Houston. The playoffs, while you feel good about them right now if you're a Titans fan, they're not necessarily locked up or guaranteed at this point. It's an interesting spot for the Titans to be in right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, I won't be shocked at all if they go up to Lambeau and win.
No.
Won't be shocked if they win these last two games. They go 12-4. They win the AFC South, and they could still potentially be the three that would require Buffalo to lose one more game. They obviously have the tiebreaker over Buffalo. So at the highest reaches of what they could do, they could absolutely win these last two. And Buffalo has New England and Miami. As we mentioned, the Dolphins are the surprise team in this playoff picture. They lose one of those. The Titans get the three, which to me is very valuable because if you get the three, you would be set up to, if you beat the six, you would be set up to play the Steelers in the divisional round versus having to go to Kansas City. If you're in the 4-5 game, barring an upset, because obviously the one is going to get the lowest available seed, but barring an upset, you're in the 4-5, you know, you win that and you would have a next game against Kansas City. Right now, Titans are set up to play the Browns in a 4-5 game at home, a rematch. If they got up to the three, you know, if they win the division, they'd probably have the Colts, you know. So that's the problem with the three is you might actually feel worse about, you know, you might feel a little bit more tenuous on the matchup
yeah.
there. Although maybe not. I mean, you were down 38-7 to the Browns. Browns look pretty good. But regardless, that's the highest reach. But you go the other way, if the Titans – lose to the Packers Sunday, which obviously no one's going to be shocked if that happens. They're probably looking at an absolute must-have game at Houston. Remember last year they had the same thing, and they went out and Derrick Henry ran wild and they won. And also the Texans were in the playoffs and resting all their best players. You know, in this game, the Texans have nothing to play for other than, hey, let's play one more football game. Deshaun, give it a rip, buddy. And that's not comforting. I mean, it's a dangerous team. They almost beat the Colts yesterday in Indy. They almost beat the Colts two of the last 3 weeks. They fumbled at the goal line late, but there's a lot ahead here of really important, really high pressure football for the Titans, them and other games. And of course the Colts this week, huge combo situation with the Titans, Titans at Packers, Colts at Steelers. The Colts finish with the Jags. And, of course, Jets fans would love to think that the Jags might somehow sweep the Colts and put them back in position to get Trevor Lawrence. But you know, they probably won't. So this Steelers-Colts game is huge also. You know, for the Titans, we'll know Sunday night if they have to win or not, basically, at Lambeau to win the division.
Yeah, and if I'm a Titans fan, like, I'm playing pretty close attention tonight to the Steelers in their game against Cincinnati, because the Steelers, the last few weeks, to me, have not looked like a very good football team. I mean, they've looked like they've regressed significantly, and obviously, I mean, they've been hurt by some injuries, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But Roethlisberger, the last few weeks, just hasn't looked good. So I get it. It's Cincinnati. It's not a great test tonight for the Steelers, but I'm interested to see, like, do they look clean offensively, or are they starting to struggle again, even against a team like Cincinnati? Because if that's the case, and they're still struggling, and you go into this matchup against Indy coming up on Sunday. At one point, I think you felt great about that game if you're the Titans, that the Steelers had a great chance to beat the Colts. And I feel less and less confident based on what I've seen out of both teams in the past few weeks. I'll be paying pretty close attention to the Steelers game tonight.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. You got to come up with some reason to watch this awful game.
That is true.
Yeah, I mean, that. But that is, I mean, and then they're going to get the Colts on a short week after this game. But, yeah, they've looked bad. Offensively lately, Roethlisberger has looked bad. So they need to figure it out. The Titans need them to have it figured out, certainly for Sunday. And again, if you want to talk about the worst case scenario, it's not crazy to think the Titans could lose these last two. I mean, Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers, you know, the Titans have trouble affecting quarterbacks. We know this. Those are two quarterbacks who will make you pay dearly for not affecting them. You know, look, like we said, Ravens, Giants, Bengals. Titans have the tiebreaker head-to-head, but I like the Ravens to be 11-5. There's nothing for sure in this league, but I like their chances. You know, the Dolphins are that other team that right now the Titans have the tiebreaker. So if they lose one of these last two, the Titans should be fine getting in. They're at the Raiders. You know, not a gimme, certainly. The Raiders have been bad lately, but Dolphins could win that game. And then they're at the Bills. Will the Bills have anything to play for in that last game? We mentioned their seeding, but it's possible that they won't, that they have the division locked up. They're not going to get the one, so they may be sitting Josh Allen and those guys, and the Dolphins could end up 11-5. I mean, it doesn't take huge leaps of creativity here to see how this could go bad for the Titans.
But you know what? I'm just so happy they're not going 9-7 again. They get the 10 wins yesterday. The 9-7 bug has been thrown out the door. We talked about that earlier in the year. You've got to find a way to get around 9-7. Now the Titans, Joe, have officially done that. And it's amazing that they've done it. And still, when you've expanded the playoffs, one more team's getting in from each conference this year. They still hadn't wrapped it up with 10 wins.
Yeah. No, it's just the AFC is just really good. It's the better conference. See, by far, for one thing, and you got some surprise teams in there. You know, the Ravens are a disappointing team, but again, I think they're going to get in. Obviously, the Dolphins are the biggest surprise. You know, I mean, I picked the Browns getting the playoffs, but I think you have to consider them a surprise team. And, you know, of course, the Raiders were, but they've faded. They're not mathematically eliminated yet, but, you know, they need all kinds of help to have any chance at 7-7. But it's just been a very good conference. And, you know, the thing about this whole situation is, yes, you would hope that at 10-4, in an expanded year, that you would be at least know that you're in. But, hey, if you're the team, if you are what you hope to be, what you think you can be, and really make a run in this thing, well, here you go. The playoffs really kind of start now. So go prove it, you know. This team can go win in Lambeau, playing its best football. You have to play in any of these games. That game at Houston, whoever in the postseason. Now, the Titans are going to have to – the offense is going to have to play at the highest level, and it's capable of doing that. It's capable of overcoming the defense. So, you know, go prove it. I mean, it'd be great to be able to sort of rest a little bit and get ready for a postseason, but the Titans are going to have to earn their way in.
Our friend Johnny on Twitter says, shows you where I am, but the Steelers are my survivor pick this week. Survive in advance, hopefully, tonight against the Bengals. It's impressive, Johnny, that you're still in a survivor pool in week 15.
That's amazing. Holy cow. I hope that there's a large reward because, yes, it is very difficult to get even close to this late in the season in a survivor pool. So good luck, Johnny. And that's not bad. That's not a bad spot. Steelers against the Bengals at this point with no Joe Burrow.
And Joe, I mean, if you would like to take this opportunity to toot your own horn about reaching the finals of the Titans Media Fantasy League, I give the floor to you.
No, I mean, I owe you an apology. I owe our listeners an apology. I have not talked about my fantasy football team nearly enough this year. You know,
I've really we've all been really missing out on this.
Yeah, I feel bad. So I vow to talk a lot about my championship ascent. I am in the championship game against Jessica Bliss in the Titans Media League. Glennon, Kaharski, Bacharach, Wyatt. Hey, they're all on the sidelines enjoying the show. So very tough, hard-earned win. It actually came down last night. Jarvis Landry, I was up very close. I had Landry, and my competitor had Kareem Hunt and Rashard Higgins.
Wow.
But Landry did got that TD, and that was the winner for me. So big matchup, overall dominant performance, and we'll break down the matchup throughout the week.
That's
don't,
right.
Don't worry. Yes. We'll have at least probably, what, 3-4 segments on it Wednesday.
That's right. We're all very proud of you here on the show. When we come back,
thank you.
Our friend Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us. We'll break down this Titans win against the Lions. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.